All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Tuesday, November 8th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to be breaking down a Tuesday slate of NBA. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short, and you can grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which will calculate NBA optimal lineups for FanDuel and for DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. That also includes NFL projections, which have been going swimmingly over the last couple weeks, which we're really happy about, really just for the whole season, but very happy about that. So all falls under one membership umbrella. Go sign up for 3 days and just $29.95 a month after that. No better deal in the industry, we do not think. All right. Interesting day. Real quick, back to yesterday. Yesterday in the NBA was one of those, all the games we didn't think were going to be blowouts were blowouts, and then all the games that we thought were going to be were close. And sometimes when that happens at DFS, it can kind of throw you off. How do you think about, walk me through our process, or walk everyone else through our process when it comes to blowouts? Because I think that actually, before we even talk about today's games, it's just an interesting sort of macro piece that we have to be concerned with the NBA.
Sure. I think that blowouts are an area where no one that I've read in the DFS space has come to any sort of satisfactory conclusions on right. just yet. I mean, I think everyone makes some kind of adjustments. We tend to make minutes-based adjustments and kind of game script-based adjustments based on who you are. So an example from last season might be if you had the Pelicans in a game where they were likely to get blown out, maybe you would tick down Anthony Davis and tick up Ryan Anderson, right? Because Anderson is a three-point shooter, and they tended to just jam the ball to him over and over again and hope to come back, and guys like Davis would fall out of favor on some level. So you'll see this happen with a number of teams, like the Kings come to mind, Boogie Cousins there, and just oftentimes big men get hurt more than short guys who shoot from far away. So that's kind of how it generally goes, but it also just introduces this huge degree of uncertainty, right? Because a lot of times in games that are supposed to be blowouts, if they happen to stay close, then there winds up being good money on both sides of the ball, right? Because mm-hmm. other people are scared away from the game because of the blowout risk. So you can get separation and you can get upside because, you know, there's more possessions than oftentimes Vegas accounted for. And there's all these other positive contextual factors. But this is a too long, didn't read version is blowouts are a complete mess and most people don't know how to interpret them.
Yeah, and we got burned off of Westbrook because Westbrook ended up being in a blowout against Miami, who wore I'm not sure if they've worn it before this year. Miami wore the ugliest NBA uniforms I've ever seen in my life. I almost couldn't watch the game. I encourage you, if you did not watch the game, to Google something from last night's game or watch some highlights. The color scheme, I'm not a big guy like this on the aesthetic piece, but it's worth mentioning that if I had known Miami was going to wear these uniforms, I would not have recommended any player. I automatically would not have recommended any player from the team. You simply cannot root for a team that wore such atrocious uniforms. Westbrook gets burnt off his minutes because of the said blowout. Golden State regresses a little bit in terms of shooting, though, with guys like Klay, and then obviously Curry sets the record for most threes in a game. Yeah, the Pelicans were able to keep it close, and then all those guys sort of hit the upside that you were looking for, even though the game opened at minus 17 for the Warriors, which is about as high as a spread you'll see going into an NBA game.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly are implications for that tonight, right? We have some fairly big spreads with the Cavs favored by 8.5 over Atlanta, the Blazers over Phoenix.
Yeah, and those aren't like those crazy sort of outlier double-digit ones that we can really start worrying about blowout potential.
Sure, though, 17 points against Golden State for Golden State last night.
Yeah, so it won't be a minutes adjustment, I don't think, for these games, but it just is one of those. Blowouts are one of, there's a couple things that can tilt you off of NBA DFS. Blowouts are clearly one of them in terms of just like getting those. Because, you know, if you take a for Westbrook last night, you get a 33% minutes downgrade off of him just not playing like anywhere in the fourth quarter. That's just something that's almost impossible to make up, right? Especially in cash games. Obviously, you're totally dead in tournaments, but just for that cash game to get buzzed off that kind of minutes is, I don't know, just it's annoying. Moving on.
I mean, he hadn't been fantastic before then either, so it's not like you were going to crush it if you had Westbrook probably, but yeah, it's definitely not ideal.
Okay, so let's get into the games tonight. A lot of just different interesting sort of injury pieces that we can bring up today. Some interesting games going with a couple of the teams. The first, I'm starting at point guard. The Kings are going to get Darren Collison back, so the long national nightmare of having to think about Ty Lawson hopefully is over. but, you know, where do you see a guy like, and he wasn't a guy that I led the picks with or anything in writing today's value plays article, but where do you see a guy like Collison fitting back in with the Kings? Do you see him as not necessarily the answer for them at point guard. He's not exactly a dish first guy. like he's not like a Rondo, right, from last year, where I think Rondo clearly helped Boogie's fantasy output, just because he was just sort of that pick and roll, always look for the assist kind of guy. How do you see Collison sort of fitting himself back onto this Kings team?
We've seen Collison provide tremendous value out of the point guard position for the Kings in the past. His usage went way up after he came over from the Clippers. He's not shy about just jacking up shots. He does get a few assists, although to your point, he's not a classic pass-first point guard necessarily. But yeah, he could return value. The $6,500 price tag, without the database in front of me, I'd have to, I just can't riff on whether that feels like the right price or not. It does feel a little bit higher than what we paid for him in the past in the starting point guard role, but it's a different team than it was in the past too. So I think we can pretty safely just take a wait and see on him, even in a solid matchup against New Orleans. But I'm certainly intrigued.
Other than him, other than him, as if I'm considering playing him for cash, I'm really not. Damian Lillard has pretty much an ideal matchup against the Suns tonight. The Blazers are heavy favorites, 7.5, like we said, over Phoenix. They're playing at home this week. They played in a pretty high-scoring game last week. This game opened at like 203 and then like just instantly jacked up to 218. So I'm not even that opening at 203 seems
typo.
Yeah, exactly. Like oopsie daisies. Like I can't imagine like why they would have ever opened the game that low. Do you see Lillard's sort of skill set against this Suns team that still plays at a pretty fast pace with a low defensive efficiency? Is he like the safe cash game play at point guard today?
I believe he is a safe cash game play. He's been kind of a little bit up and down on this price point. I mean, we really haven't had to pay $10,000 almost for Lillard in his whole lifetime as a DFS player. So it's definitely getting outside of my comfort zone a little bit. And I suspect just knowing our system as well as we do, like he's pretty unlikely to show up outside of great matchups. But, last game against Phoenix, he played 39 minutes. And if he's going to play 39 minutes at one of the fastest paces in the league, then he could certainly be worth this price. So I see him as a chalk big money guy tonight for sure.
Yeah, definitely on DraftKings where he's only 9,100, you get a discount on him.
Yeah, much better deal.
Right, you get a discount on him over there. So it could be one of those. I could see a situation where we play into this, have him one place, don't have him in the other. That will be sometimes the way that the system defaults in terms of just overall price tags where, he's about a little less than 10% more on one site. That's a pretty significant difference. Now, it's going to fall. I think the thing that we're going to find tonight, though, is there are going to be a lot of ways to fit in salary like this because of guys like J.J. Barea. I don't think Darren Williams is going to play again. It looks like Barea is going to start again for the Mavericks. The Mavericks are, I think Dirk is out as well, which actually it's funny because I think in the past there was a game where Dirk sat and J.J. started also. So it's like his minutes just seem so locked in. For Dallas, his price has climbed tonight, but can we still sort of go the Barea well where he's not a punt anymore, but his opportunity is about as good as you'll see in the game?
He's not a punt by its strictest definition, like a guy under 4,000 or in the right. mid-4,000s. But, I mean, he played 46 minutes against Milwaukee. He's the only option out of the backfield. Backfield? Out of the backcourt?
We got the NFL, NFL podcast. Got the NFL podcast on your mind, buddy. It's okay. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to pivot.
Really hard. Talking about sports all day, not the hardest thing in the world, but it can, grind you down just like anything. Kurt Cobain killed himself. So
whoa, buddy. Yeah. Took a real dark.
Sometimes things get hard. That's all I'm saying. Not for me, though.
Took a real dark turn.
J.J. Barea. Yeah. J.J. Barea. So, playing 46 minutes last night, two nights ago, is completely crazy for a guy you can get for less than $6,000. And he's really not even in, like, the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope variety, where it's like, just stand still and hope to shoot occasionally.
We have another guy in that variety on his team, which we're going to get to in a second. But
but he does get, he's in there getting 5 assists a night. He can chip in a hustle rebound or two, get some steals. So I think Barea is a phenomenal play, almost a must play at these prices. 17 and 18 shots in the last two games. Love him.
Yeah, just as a note on that 46 minutes, that game did go to overtime, which is hard to tell when you just look at the score because it was like 85-73 or something like that, which is it's really hard to score less points than that.
Sure, 41 minutes in regulation. You get the idea.
Yeah, no. So I just want to say that he didn't play. It wasn't like he sat out for 2 minutes. But anyway.
Buddy, we're selling big flashy things here. You don't need to stomp on the point with all your realism and accuracy.
He gets the Lakers. Who continue their fast-paced, low defensive efficiency ways. Not as bad as they've been in the past, but by no means good. Still
fastest team in the league this year. Ridiculous.
I meant more on the defensive efficiency piece of it. I think that they're still fast. I think they've gotten slightly better on defense. Again, that's like, I can't even think of a good example. They're not. They're still
they're,
not.
They're merely below league average now. Right?
Exactly. Exactly. Before that, you were getting like a 10% or more upgrade on them just because they would sprint and they would just stand around on D, you know, and just do nothing and just like sort of play Olay defense. They're not doing that exact thing anymore. That's all. But still. Yeah. This Dallas team is really just interesting across the board when it comes to guys like this. I think Bray is one of those guys where we talk about this just really in all DFS sports, is when you can remember a guy being cheaper and he's not as cheap anymore, you can sort of talk yourself out of him because you can remember the good old days of when he was 4,000, right? It doesn't matter. Like, he's a huge usage guy. He does dominate the ball for them. I think he's a very, very safe cash game play, especially too because Dallas just they have very few horses right now. They really don't have anywhere to turn, especially in the backcourt with Williams out. After those two guys, I wrote up Kyrie Irving. Irving is an interesting guy this year. His usage is up this year at the expense of the assists, as they're sort of deferring to him more in the all. LeBron is just deferring him more to Love and Irving for just the overall shot output, which is just an interesting way to take it, and makes sense with the way LeBron plays. You don't need, if you have Irving and Love, you don't need LeBron shooting, and that's probably correct overall. Why have him? He's just not as good of a field goal shooter as those two other guys. But where do you see Irving sort of falling in with that class of player? The Cleveland has a high just implied total against Atlanta, but what do you think of Irving?
I mean, Irving at 7,300 seems like a tremendous bargain. We've comfortably played 8,000 for Irving in the past on the similar levels of usage and on ball time. So while the assists are down, I do think the increased field goals will start to yield to better fantasy totals. 17 shots last game, just 3 field goals made. So I think that, you know, it's hard to call anyone on Cleveland super safe just because when you have that much talent on the high end, you know, guys can disappear for games. It's kind of the Golden State problem. But in a solid matchup with Atlanta Schroeder is definitely an offense first point guard. So I think Kyrie gets a little room to breathe here and should be an easy bet for, you know, 4.5x points per dollar, if not 5x or more.
After that, I'm not seeing a ton that I love at point guard. I mean, guys like Chris Dunn have a decent matchup against Brooklyn. I get a little worried about his usage in the offense and just some of his minutes. There's some minutes concern with him because I'm not totally sure that Tibbs wants to play him in crunch time. Minnesota's a team that we'll get to in a little bit. They're a little difficult to evaluate at this point because they played in a bunch of blowouts. So, you know, Tim Frazier against Sacramento, he kind of plays okay against the Warriors last night. You simply can't trust what the Pelicans are doing. They did sign Archie Goodwin to back up Frazier now that Lance Stevenson is hurt. So the Pelicans I just see as a team where, I don't know, kind of fool me once, shame on, you know, whoever, and then fool me twice, shame on whatever the rest of that quote is.
Yeah, a little George Bush action, right? Yeah. Fool me twice. You can't fool me again.
Exactly. So I think sort of for me it's kind of Lillard, Barea, Irving a little bit lower, and then you can kind of take a stab at some of these other cheaper guys. I don't think I'm going to go that direction. Shooting guard, I'd written up Tim Hardaway. With the idea I thought he was going to start for Korver, but it looks like Thabo Sabolosha is going to start tonight. So that probably takes Hardaway out of the mix. Though I do think there will be mid 20s minutes for him. And at 3,600, you can probably do worse. But let's go.
We can dive into Thabo too, but I suspect he'll be quite a good play on 4,000 at FanDuel. He's been pretty solid, even getting bench minutes. So the increased minutes there will probably put him into optimals, I would guess.
I would think so too. We haven't updated that yet. After him, shooting guard is a little weird. There's a couple positions. Well, look, there's only 5 positions in basketball. So when you say there's a couple that are hard, it's kind of just like saying the whole thing's hard. But I did have some issues sort of finding the shooting guard value tonight. Now, the guy I ended up writing up was Devin Booker. Booker has been just crazy the last 2 games. After he returns from a toe injury, doesn't do much against Portland in that first game back. And the last game back, he has just jacked up a million shots, right?
Only 51 shots, but yes.
Right. Now, one of those games went to overtime as well, but still, it kind of doesn't really matter. He's the highest usage guy on the Suns. He's their leading scorer. Is he entering sort of like that elite shooting guard, just that elite shooting guard territory for you if this is the kind of usage he's going to get on a nightly basis?
Sure, we've seen Booker, like this player profile, like I'm picturing maybe Jimmy Butler in the past or something of that nature where, you know, 7,700 or even up to 8,000 is more the right price. So Booker on 6,700, if you believe, not even the current usage because he's not going to shoot 25 times a game for the rest of the season. Right. But if you even believe high teens shots per game, he's going to be worth more than 6,700. And I think that there's no reason the Suns won't keep going in that direction just because it's been working. So I suspect that we're still buying Booker at a discount to where his price is headed.
He gets those two dream matchups against the Lakers and the Pelicans. So those two teams are, you know, great, just guys we want to target players against when their matchups come up. Portland is not exactly in that same group as the other two. So, right, it stands to reason you're going to see a little bit of a usage downgrade on him. They can match up around the perimeter with McCollum a little bit better than the Lakers or the Pelicans can. But in that 67 price range on FanDuel, I think you are getting some safety. The problem with guys, sometimes with guys like Booker, is they just have to score. And because they just don't do a ton of other stuff. Now, yes, he has some rebounds and assists, but in 39, 3 rebounds and 7 assists in 39 minutes, 4 and 3 in 38 minutes, is just those are pretty low numbers.
Incidental rebounds.
Exactly. Like, you're just going to get those things kind of standing around on the court. It's just not enough. And so if the shot isn't falling for him, you can be in trouble on this price point, right? Like, you can just have, if you get sort of like a 30% shooting or worse game, because guys just have that, you might be a little bit dusted off of his thing. Now, the problem there is that most shooting guards fit into that profile, so it's not like you're getting killed against the rest of the group. Now, I can't even believe I'm going to say this. Now, Wes Matthews, this guy, I simply don't know what's going on here. He's been horrendous. Now, he played 43 minutes last game, because they went to overtime against Milwaukee. He had 9 points, 1 rebound, and 1 assist. It is nearly impossible to be this bad in 43 minutes, like, just by the luck of the ball. Like, ball bounces off someone's head and you grab a rebound. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't even know how you're this bad. Our system is going to have, and the game before that, he was arguably worse. So in only 28 minutes, he had an injury concern. What do we do with a guy like Wes Matthews? The system on his expected minutes and sort of like some historical pieces for him is going to have a very difficult time getting away from 4,600 without a massive shift in our projection for him. Do we make the massive shift, or do we just sort of ride and die with a guy like Matthews?
Well, I mean, it kind of feels like the system and just us in general are sort of like an abused spouse with Wes Matthews at this point, where we're like making excuses for him and, you know, just trying to do anything to keep him in, you know, in our favor. We're not trying to do that. We don't like Wes Matthews personally. He's cost us a lot of money on nights where he's disappeared. He's made us some money too on the nights where he shows up. But the weird thing with Matthews, I think, that our system struggles with is that there really isn't a lot of historical precedent for a guy just shooting flat 42 to 44% on lock for his whole career and then dipping down to 39 last year and then to 28 this year. Mm-hmm. So like the fact that he could shoot the most shots of his career and be doing so at less than 28% completion percentage, or whatever it's called when in basketball, field goal percentage, mm-hmm. is really troubling. So I just don't know what to do with Matthews. I mean, it would be sort of unprecedented for his shooting to drop off this dramatically at his age. I mean, he's just turned 30, but he could be a one of a kind, just complete loser. I'm not sure.
At 4,600 on FanDuel, if you think that he's going to play minutes in the mid-30s, and I think that's a pretty safe bet for him, considering sort of the injury piece and that he can sort of shift between the 2 and the 3 on this team, depending on what kind of lineup they want to run out there, I think I'm just going to end up doing it. And it's going to feel terrible, but I just don't see – the position is not that deep to begin with. Now, another guy that's sort of in his price range that – arguably feels like he's safer is a guy like Sean Kilpatrick, who came off the bench for the Nets. I mean, Jeremy Lin is out. Kilpatrick came off the bench for them last game and sort of spelled Whitehead, though they did play Isaiah Whitehead and Kilpatrick together, so they would at times have Kilpatrick running the point, at times having him playing the two. He's coming off the bench, but the minutes seem to have been there. If you had to just choose between a guy like Kilpatrick against the Timberwolves or a guy like Matthews against the Lakers, it's not an even swap necessarily, but what are your kind of thoughts on a guy like Kilpatrick?
I'd choose Kilpatrick. I think, you know, he does enough around his scoring. Like, he had a 10-rebound game against Detroit, which Wes Matthews, well, 5 games worth of rebounds for him, it seems like. He is shooting a ton as well, averaging 14 shots a game in those last 3 games, and has put up good fantasy totals even when the shot's not falling, you know, so like 33% field goal rate in his last contest and still managed 31 fantasy points. So Kilpatrick definitely seems like the safer option. He'll be the chalk option as well, just because a lot of people played him in his last matchup, figuring he might get the start, and he was still good. So you know, people definitely stick with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it mentality. So I think for all those reasons, he feels like a better cash game play to me.
Yeah, too. I hate playing guys off the bench just because they are sure. The, like, you know, the old Will Barton thing from last year where you just do fall. You can fall victim to. So like last game, he got a few extra minutes because Whitehead did get in foul trouble early. Right. So like what they had to take Whitehead out in the first few minutes of the first quarter because he picked up just two immediate fouls. That Kilpatrick was the easy swap in there. So he gets a few extra minutes. That being said, there aren't many bench guys that I would consider sort of on the safe side. Kilpatrick does seem to be one of them at this point. So, yeah, between those two guys, I'd probably go Kilpatrick. But, man, talk about just never playing a guy on the right night. I just if we were to get away from Wes Matthews, you can just guarantee he goes off tonight. In the same Dallas category, Harrison Barnes at small forward. Barnes gets a clear bump when Dirk is not playing. They will shift Barnes to the four. They'll play him at sort of 3-4 and go small ball. He put up a ton of shots last game. He wasn't necessarily efficient on those shots, but he just has such a high floor in terms of how many minutes the Mavericks going to pay. Is Barnes a must play for you in cash games today?
Yeah, the price just hasn't moved. Everyone played him last time, and he was great. I just don't see how you get away from him.
The price has ticked up on DraftKings to $6,700. I don't think that's necessarily pushing the envelope now, but it's getting close. Though again, he's just a different guy when Dirk's not on the court, and they just need someone to take the shots. So the Barnes thing, I'll probably end up wanting to play him on both sides. The other guy not necessarily in this Barnes category, and he's probably better actually, is TJ Warren. Warren's a guy who's come out. I don't think many of us expected Warren to be second on the team in scoring and total shots for the Suns going in, especially on a team with, like, has Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight and guys like that. But he's really emerged as a guy that they're willing to sort of feed the ball. Like, that's been sort of the end of guys like Bledsoe and Knight, is that Warren is just the guy that's getting the shots for the Suns offense. His price has climbed too. At what point do we see the end of the price climb on a guy like TJ Warren?
Yeah, sometimes you worry about the guy turning back into a pumpkin or whatever when you see a guy kind of come out of nowhere and start going off this way. But this actually isn't unprecedented for Warren. I mean, there were stretches last season where Tucker was out where he would have 17, 19, 15 shots in a game. And he's young, too. I mean, the Suns have all the incentive in the world to groom him. First round pick in 2014, it's really coming into his own, both from a scoring and a rebounding perspective. So I think he just seems like a fantastic play. And even though the price has been climbing, in the J.J. Barea category, I guess, would be the I would give for him. Mm-hmm. I think it can actually only go up for, you know, the near term. Like, I think we'll see this trend up towards 7,000 on FanDuel. And if something dramatically changes about his role, then maybe it changes. But high 30s minutes, touching 40 at times with this kind of usage, good hustle stats around it. He's just a great play.
And we mentioned Thabo getting the start for the Hawks. I have not adjusted that in our system yet. But if we were to push him up into the maybe over 30 minutes range, if we saw that the two guard, and originally I kind of speculated that it'd be Hardaway, but if we end up seeing the two guard go a little bit more Thabo and maybe a little bit more Bazemore, because they get a little bit more of those Korver minutes, and, you know, Hardaway as well, do you think that with, where would you set Thabo's minutes at right now? Like, we had him at 28, though. I think that's low if he's going to be in the starting lineup. Is he a 30-minute guy if he were to enter the starting lineup?
Well, it's funny. 28 was going to be the number I was going to throw out as the number that felt right to me. Right. I don't know if that's a slam dunk necessarily, but maybe you could go as high as 32, I suppose. That's going to be tough. That's one we're going to have to sit with and debate, I would imagine. Bazemore is another guy just people will consider on the back of him being a chalk play with excellent results last time around. Cleveland's not probably the matchup where you want to go there, so just throwing that out there as well.
Yeah, Bogdanovich coming cheap also for the Nets. He's been playing minutes in the 30s right now. He gets a little bit of a usage bump with no Lin on the court, which helps him. So he's actually the guy. I might actually even defer to him over a guy like Cephalosha at the same price, only because I think Bogdanovich's minutes are a little more secure, though it probably is a little closer. And then I wrote up Andrew Wiggins. Again, the T-Wolves are a little difficult to figure out in terms of what Tibbs ultimately wants to do with their minutes rotations. They are slight favorites against Brooklyn in Brooklyn. Brooklyn's been feisty and has been able to stay in games this year, amazingly. Like, I'm not really sure how. Like, they do, I guess, they have a couple scorers that can just kind of keep them around games, even though they're just kind of horrendous to watch. Wiggins, to me, falls into that Devin Booker category of, if he's not scoring, then you're just dead on him. Like, he doesn't do anything else. Like, he doesn't, no, forget the assists, forget the rebounds, forget the defensive stats. He just, I think I looked it up last night, or I ran it real quick. Something like 88% of his fantasy scoring has just come from him making baskets. And
that's a tough place to be in the 6,000s,
right?
And at the small forward position, when so many guys do offer, you know, a broader statistical profile. So Wiggins strikes me as a guy, you know, when we do the picks, we hold ourselves to three guys per position. He just strikes me as the third guy who's on the outside looking in that we would not be happy playing tonight.
Yeah. Moving into power forward, you know, Anthony Davis, nothing really to say here at this point. The guy is elite. They're not worried about back-to-backs with him, really. They're not really worried about, like, he played 35 minutes last night against Golden State. He was great again. There's no reason to suspect they do a big minutes downgrade with him. Pelicans still have not won a game, which I think is probably on their minds. Like, I think they're going to – I think I can see them being just wanting to play Davis till they at least get a win, right? Like, and they can maybe start playing, you know, a little bit safer with his run. Is Davis just, like, a must-play today against Sacramento? Is there, like, either been anything to discuss, really, or no?
No, probably not. You're going to need – you know, we often talk about your punts and your payoffs. He's a clear payoff against Sacramento tonight. Sacramento, like, they've got Boogie down there, but after that, it's slim pickings in terms of their big gun defense, and it's not even clear that Boogie will spend any time chasing Davis around, so, yeah, I love him tonight.
You know, I have a question on DraftKings. Now, we're going to get to Boogie in a second, but on DraftKings, Boogie is 10-4, and Davis is 11,000, and they're both qualify as power forward center. You probably can't play them both. If you had to choose, you get a slight discount on Boogie, maybe about 7%. Who do you see as maybe the play if you had to pick between one of those two guys?
Man, that's pretty close. They offer such different things in my mind. Like, Davis just has this kind of transcendent upside that very few in the game can touch. I mean, he scored almost 100 fantasy points right earlier this season. Cousins, to me, offers, it's hard to call him safe because he'll, like, foul out or kick a ball at somebody or whatever, but I guess my gut from having played both of those guys a ton of times is sort of that Boogie offers more safety from time to time. All right, I should rephrase. He's a lot less likely to just disappear or have his coach throw a tantrum and sit him for no reason, or, you know, to have a coach start just shooting threes the whole game. So I don't know. That you're getting Boogie at a discount, maybe I would lean that way for cash games, but hopefully you can tell from my voice that it feels close.
As of right now at FanDuel, both of them are in lineups, so I don't think it's really this decision there. The pricing is just a little bit tougher on a site like DraftKings, where it's just harder to fit in double big guys. Like, for instance, right now on FanDuel, our first iteration of lineups has Lillard, Davis, and Cousins in it, right? So, like, basically the three most expensive guys on this league, except for LeBron. Whereas DraftKings, it's kind of choosing, if you kind of need to choose, well, no, it has Lillard and then one of the other ones. It's very difficult without a clear-cut sure punt right now to get all three in the lineup. Again, this is early in the morning. These things can change. Also at the power forward position, we have guys like Georgie Dang. You know, I've probably recommended every single Wolves guy so far. I mean, do you trust a guy like Dang because of the minutes? Like, is he just... Because DFS NBA, it's all about minutes, right? Like, there's really no... I mean, there's other things. Like, you need to be good at basketball as well. There are guys that will just disappear for long periods of time. But if the Wolves are going to play their starters in close games a number of minutes, is he just, like, a safer guy at his price points?
Well, it's a great matchup against Brooklyn, so you really like that quite a bit. Dang is kind of weird because until the last two games, I have touted him as one of the safest daily fantasy commodities. You know, he does it all. He'll get steals, blocks, rebounds. You know, can score certainly, but in the last two games, he's really taken a back seat. I mean, just shot 14 total times in those contests. The rebounds were fairly low, obviously shot poorly from the field and managed just 30 fantasy points across two different games. So he just doesn't feel safe to me at the moment, but I'm trying to tell myself that that's just because of a couple bad games in a row. So I guess a long story short is I could see myself playing him, not feeling great, and then feeling much better, once, you know, halftime rolls around and he's already paid 3x or something.
Yeah, I think the big issue at power forward is just that the player pool is small at this position, right? Like, the guys who are somewhat on the safer side, like guys like, I wouldn't even call them totally safe, but like guys like Millsap and Love, that their safety is priced into them at this point. So they're really, you're not getting bargains on guys like that. And then guys after that, like, these, it's just question mark after question mark after question mark, right? With minutes, like, guys like, well, Dang, this is where Dang falls into this category of sort of safe. It's just like, he's the only one you can trust, like Julius Randle, Aminu, Zach Randolph, you know, Jermichael Green. The list goes on and on, right, of just these guys that, you just can't trust. I think one of the problems is with the current NBA is that the teams will go so small ball at power forward, right? And they'll shift these traditional threes up to the four that the traditional power forward guy that is labeled a power forward just isn't a guy that plays 35 minutes in the current NBA, right? Like they just can't, like guys like right. guys like that just aren't, you know, guys like Millsap and Love can shoot threes, so they're a little bit different, right? But
right.
A lot of these other guys, Zebo, Jokic, you know, Trevor Booker,
yeah,
like
Patrick Patterson, yeah.
Patrick, right. Awesome. These guys just simply cannot, they just simply can't be on the court for long periods of time because they're so overexposed with what other teams are doing. So I'm
sure,
wondering.
Or become so matchup dependent that they'll play 37 minutes one night and then 24 the next, right? And then for our DFS purposes, that's just a death sentence.
Yeah, so this is where I just trend to just grab. This is where I would even consider playing a guy like Millsap at a slightly, you know, elevated price, only because I just trust that he's going to kind of get his 35 minutes. And it might, you're not going to get, you might get some upside in him, but he just is safer than the rest of the group because you really are sort of playing with fire with the rest of this group of guys. All right, finishing off at center. The center, I mean, we discussed Boogie. I think that he's pretty much on FanDuel, the direction I'm going to be going. I can't imagine getting too much away from him. I don't think the price is anywhere close to his actual true value when he's got all things rolling, and this is a great matchup against the Pelicans. After him, I did write up Karl Anthony Towns. Towns has been, I was like a little concerned about what was going to happen with Minnesota when they lost Rubio, just from a, like, just hard to know exactly. Chris Dunn is just not Rubio, and so the...
Yeah, and when you're reliant on someone to get you the ball, that's a very worthwhile concern.
Exactly. Now, he has been able to score in the short term. He's just, I mean, from a talent perspective, Towns is a transcendent talent, so there's no concern there. And we discussed, too, Minnesota's minutes have been all over the place. Can you see a guy like Towns being a safe cash game play at this point, just because of like sort of how Minnesota plans on using him?
It doesn't feel phenomenal, like certainly not in sort of that matchup dependent, you can just plug him in their way. Not many guys are at 8,700, but Towns doesn't really have that profile to me. You know, he's basically got, let's see here, one game this season where you would be really thrilled to have played him, and that was the Denver ridiculous 32-14 game. Outside of that, you'd be moderately pleased with OKC, and then you'd be pretty bummed with the other three games. But this is one of those times, too, where early season, like just using straight points per game or rebounds per game is pretty misleading, because the three matchups before that, he faced off against Marc Gasol, Boogie, and then Marc Gasol again. And that's a really, really tough slate to go against. And he was actually pretty reasonable by those metrics. So I think you can play Towns against Brooklyn, just an ideal sort of dream matchup. I think I will, even if he is quite good, I'll continue to try to be in wait and see mode on him going forward. But yeah, I think he's fine for tonight.
Yeah, I'm a little more intrigued with him at 80. He's a clear $2,000 less than Boogie on DraftKings, which is obviously a significant downgrade. I mean, we actually still have Boogie as a slightly better points per dollar play, which actually just probably tells you more about Boogie than it does about Towns, just in terms of like his skill set. But I do like the discount you get there. You can, especially like we said on DraftKings, where the pricing, you know, you can taking advantage of that discount actually does open up things sort of along the rest of the lineup. I also wrote up Bogut. Bogut played big minutes without Dirk the other day. He takes no shots in this offense. So it's he's sort of like in the Tyson Chandler clone of hope he grabs the rebounds for him to hit value, because they're not going to be feeding him the ball to do anything on offense. How much does it concern you when a guy is just so rebound heavy to hit that's basically all he does? Like, is there a price point at which you can sort of trust it, or is it just too iffy?
Yeah, Bogut is starting to move past that price point where I feel super comfortable by it. But, you know, we've seen precedent for guys being very excellent plays in the $4,000 range who are basically rebound-only guys in the past. Tyson Chandler comes to mind here most predominantly, but there have been other examples as well. Still, basically what that does is create a guy who has no ceiling whatsoever. So, you know, writing off Bogut having a 50 fantasy point game, not that that's likely, obviously in 4,500, but you can just write it off completely. He's also a big minutes risk guy, so I don't know. A lot would have to go right for me to feel comfortable playing him in a given night, or I should say probably go wrong with some of my other options, but, you know, not terrible. But I guess, like, the thing I want to caution people against most is when you see a guy like Bogut and you see that he's cheap, your mind might go to, ooh, good punt play to pay up for big guys elsewhere. That's really not what he's providing you with. You know, you do much better to take a much bigger payoff guy like Barea, even if he's more expensive, because Bogut is just incapable of going off if he's going to shoot four times a game.
Yeah, I'm with you on the concern there. That's really just it. Like I said, there's certain centers like Tyson Chandler being one of them that just need. They're the fifth option on offense, and really they're like the seventh because they'll just defer back around the horn, you know, sort of to like the other players before they even consider.
Oh yeah, I mean the only time they're the option is when they get a rebound and no one's standing between them and the basket.
Right. Anyway, that's it for us today. Really interesting day of NBA. It's already sort of shaping up to be sort of a stars and scrubs style play. I think just in terms of we have this many punts early in the day, that's usually a good sign for some of that top end talent being able to get as much in as possible. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head over to the site, free 3-day trial to our projection system with optimal lineups powered by Lineup Lab. And it's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. You're good to go, buddy. Talk to you again on Thursday.
Yeah, buddy. See you there.